and welcome back to Weird on the Rocks. This is a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. I'm your host, Katie. So today's episode is something that might be kind of polarizing for my audience, and that is the case of JonBenet Ramsey. If you are a true crime lover like myself and watch documentaries or read true crime books or listen to podcasts about true crime, then you might be rolling your eyes right now because the story of JonBenet's murder has definitely gotten a ton of coverage and it might seem a little overdone. Especially this time of year, a lot of content creators cover her story. However, this is a case that is brought up to me a lot. I have friends and family members who aren't super into true crime, but remember when this happened and like to hear theories about it. This is definitely one of the most well-known true crime cases, and I think a lot of people just don't really know the true facts, and the story has just been muddled a lot over the years. My own mom and I have had several conversations about JonBenet's murder, and we've talked about what I remember as a young child and what she remembers as a grown woman at the time. And there has actually been a lot of new information supplied to the public since the murder happened, and it seems like the public's overall opinion of the case has kind of shifted since it happened. The murder of JonBenet Ramsey is one of the first true crime events that I remember, along with the O.J. Simpson case. At the time of her murder, I was 7 years old, which was only a year older than her. I remember my mom watching stuff about it on the news all the time and seeing JonBenet's face. I remember seeing magazines at the checkout stand with her face plastered all over them. And I actually remember thinking that if she was killed, that I could be killed too. I was around the same age as her. The story of her murder and all the weird details around it really shocked the entire country. JonBenet was an adorable, sweet little girl who was in beauty pageants and came from a very wealthy and respected family. And things like this just don't happen to white upper class families. And I think this is why this case got so much notoriety and why it is still a popular case to talk about to this day. I think people were also especially shocked and upset and scared by this because the case was never closed and there was never an ending to this, really. There wasn't someone to take the blame or point the finger at, and it left, you know, the whole nation feeling afraid and on edge and looking for justice for JonBenet, who was no longer here to tell her side of the story. I hope that even if you have listened to every podcast out there about JonBenet or watched, you know, lots of YouTube videos, read books, whatever, I hope that you still enjoyed this episode. One of my favorite things about the true crime community is that although our cases and content often totally overlap, because I mean, there's only so many cases out there to talk about, every creator finds a way to make their show unique and enjoyable in its own way, which I love. In this episode, part one, I'm going to discuss the background of the Ramsey family and provide a step-by-step timeline of the day that JonBenet's death occurred. In part two, I will dive into the different theories and evidence surrounding what really happened to JonBenet, so please remember to check back in 2 weeks for the second part of the series. Real quick, I want to share another podcast promo with you guys. This one comes from Anne all the way over in Australia from the Murder Laid podcast. So let's listen to her promo.
How well do any of us really know the city in which we live? We live in these metropolises full of strangers doing God knows what to God knows who. When I was like 11, I saw a headline that made me realise I really didn't know my city. Adelaide is the murder capital of Australia, was what was announced down at me from the TV. And to be honest, that's when the true crime junkie in me began. Some of us refer to Adelaide as the city of churches. The government would like you to refer to us as the festival state. But to be honest, some of us call it Stabilade. I call it Murderlade. I'd like to welcome you to Murderlade, a true crime podcast hosted by me, full disclosure. I'm not a journalist, I'm the daughter of a cop, and I just want to share with you my beloved city's dark, sordid underbelly, I will dive deep into some of our most gruesome, fascinating, and underreported crimes that have given us the infamous title of Murderlade. The first few episodes will focus on the family murders between 1979 and 1983, including the first murder I remember watching the trial of. That's Murderlade. Find it now on your favourite podcast platform.
You guys should definitely check out the Murderlade podcast. And if you want to find my show, I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Weird on the Rocks Podcast, Twitter at Weird_Rocks, and the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com. Please subscribe wherever you're listening now and rate and review the show on iTunes. Before we get into the good stuff, I want to share this week's beverage of choice. Since it's now December, I thought I'd kick off the month with a holiday classic, which is spiked eggnog. I'm drinking the stuff from Costco right now that comes in a big bottle, and it's so good and it's cheap. I think it has rum, whiskey, and bourbon in it, if I'm not mistaken. It is so good. Someday I'll make homemade eggnog. That's on my bucket list, but that day isn't today. So I'm really grateful for places like Costco that sell it already with the booze in it, and it's helping us lazy people out. All right, cheers, and let's get weird. John Ramsey was a successful businessman and was the president of Access Graphics, a computer system company. John was married to Lucinda Pash in 1966, and the two had three children together. They divorced in 1978, and their eldest daughter, Elizabeth, died in 1992 in a car crash. The same year as his divorce from Lucinda, John met Patricia Patsy Paw, who was a beauty queen and recent journalism graduate and 19 years younger than him. The two got married in 1980 and in 1987 had their first child, a son named Burke. In 1990, they had their second child, a girl they named JonBenet. They created her name using the name John and his middle name Bennett. In 1991, when JonBenet was 1 year old, the family moved to Boulder, Colorado, where the Access Graphics headquarters was located. John Ramsey was an extremely successful businessman with a net worth of $6.4 million in 1996, and he was even named Entrepreneur of the Year by the Boulder Chamber of Commerce that same year. While John was busy with his job and away from the home a lot, Patsy stayed home with their young children in their 15-bedroom Tudor-style mansion. Patsy enjoyed social events and hosting parties, including hosting a holiday walking tour through their home just a few days before JonBenet's murder. On December 23rd, just 2 days before the murder, the Ramseys also hosted a Christmas party for 50 of their family members and friends, complete with Santa, played by a family friend. However, sources close to the family say that JonBenet was acting out of sorts that night and wasn't her usual friendly self, and was even found sitting alone on the staircase at one point during the night. Another strange fact from that Christmas party is that there was a 911 call made from inside the Ramsey home on their landline. When the dispatcher answered, the person on the other end hung up. When police came to the home, all attendees of the party denied making the call. As a former beauty pageant contestant herself, Patsy Ramsey got her young daughter involved in pageants too. Most of JonBenet's time outside of school was spent doing pageant practice or being in dance or vocal lessons. JonBenet was described as outgoing and liked being the center of attention. By the time she was six, JonBenet had won numerous crowns and her bedroom acted as a big display case for her various trophies and awards. In fact, on December 17th, just 5 days before her murder, she won the title of Little Miss Christmas of Colorado. Those close to the family said that Patsy was very involved in JonBenet's pageant career and was often described as a stage mom. She kept JonBenet on a very strict schedule and was even known to dress herself and JonBenet in matching outfits. Some family friends also recalled that there was some concern about the amount of stress JonBenet was under and that she frequently wet her bed at night, something that Patsy was very open about and very frustrated by. The housekeeper for the Ramseys, Linda Hoffman Pugh, recalls that JonBenet wet her bed very frequently and she was constantly changing out the bedding. In 2001, 5 years after the murder, John and Patsy wrote a book titled The Death of Innocence. In it, they both describe how they felt about JonBenet's involvement in beauty pageants. In John's section, he briefly mentions JonBenet's pageant career, but also states that it was one of many of her interests. In Patsy's section, however, she wrote several pages about how JonBenet had a passion for beauty pageants and that she was a gifted performer. After JonBenet's death, when community members were interviewed, many held the opinion that beauty pageants were a Southern thing that the Ramseys had brought with them when they moved from Georgia, and that it didn't represent the state of Colorado or the residents of Boulder. However, aside from the pageant involvement, JonBenet was described by those around her as a normal, sweet, and outgoing child. Many close to the family inferred that JonBenet almost had two different sides to her. She acted like a poised beauty queen on the stage, but at home, she was a normal little girl who liked to play outside and get dirty. On December 25th, 1996, Christmas Day, the Ramseys attended a party at the home of their good friends, Fleet and Priscilla White. By all accounts, the Ramseys were acting normal, and JonBenet was in a good mood and playing with friends. They decided to leave the party early because they were supposed to catch an early morning flight the next day for a family vacation. On the way home, Patsy and John stopped at several friends' homes to drop off Christmas gifts, and JonBenet fell asleep in the car. When they got home, John says he carried her up to her room and put her in her bed, and Patsy took off JonBenet's dress and put her in pajamas. JonBenet stayed asleep throughout this process, and John and Patsy say they left her asleep in her bed. Burke Ramsey, who was 9 at the time, stayed up for a bit to play with some of his new Christmas presents and then was sent to bed. John and Patsy stayed up for a few hours, finishing packing for their trip the next day and cleaning up after Christmas Day. Then the two went to bed as well. The next morning, December 26th, Patsy recalls that she woke up around 5:30 a.m. to get ready for their trip, including showering and putting on her makeup. Around 5:45 a.m., Patsy came downstairs to make a pot of coffee. This is when she found 3 sheets of paper lying on the staircase. Patsy claims that she only read the first few sentences when she realized it was a ransom note and that her daughter had been kidnapped. She then says she called for JonBenet multiple times and ran to her room to find it empty. At this point, John heard the commotion, and together, John and Patsy checked on Burke in his bedroom and found him asleep. Patsy then called 911. I can't play the 911 call because I don't own the rights to it and don't want to get sued, but I will read the transcript. 911. What's going on, ma'am? Patsy. 755 15th Street. 911. What's going on there, ma'am? Patsy. We have a kidnapping. Hurry, please. 911. Explain to me what's going on, okay? Patsy. There. We have a... There's a note left and our daughter's gone. 911. A note was left and your daughter's gone? Patsy. Yes. 911. How old is your daughter? Patsy. She's 6 years old. She's blonde, 6 years old. 911. How long ago was this? Patsy. I don't know. I just got the note and my daughter's gone. 911. Does it say who took her? Patsy. What? 911. Does it say who took her? Patsy. No. I don't know. There's a ransom note here. 911. It's a ransom note? Patsy. It says SBTC Victory. Please. 911. Okay. What's your name? Patsy. Patsy Ramsey. I'm the mother. Oh my God. Please. 911. Okay, I'm sending an officer over, okay? Patsy, please. 911, do you know how long she's been gone? Patsy, no, I don't. Please, we just got up and she's not here. Oh my God, please. Please send somebody. 911, I am, honey. Patsy, please. 911, take a deep breath and... Patsy, hurry, hurry, hurry. 911, Patsy? Patsy? And the line went dead. Now, there still remains a lot of debate surrounding this 911 call. Many believe that Patsy didn't sound genuinely concerned and makes odd choices of words, such as saying, "I'm the mother," instead of "I'm her mother," and "we have a kidnapping," without saying who was kidnapped. Since this 911 call was released, it has been analyzed by law enforcement as well as the public. Many people have been able to amplify and slow down the audio and claim to hear more talking at the end of the tape, including the voice of Burke Ramsey, who Patsy and John both claim was asleep at the time. The consensus online believes at the end of the tape, they can hear John say, "We're not speaking to you." They can hear Patsy say, "What did you do? Help me, Jesus." And you can hear Burke say, "What did you find?" If you have the time, please listen to the full 911 call. It's available on YouTube. I'm now going to read the ransom note that was found on the stairs of the Ramsey home. It reads, "Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represents a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed. If you want her to see 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence an earlier delivery pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions, and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John. Victory. SBTC. After Patsy called 911, and while she waited for officers to arrive, she called her friends Fleet and Priscilla White, whose Christmas party they had attended the night before, as well as other friends of theirs, John and Barbara Fernie. Within 8 minutes of the 911 call, police had arrived at the Ramsey residence. Officer Rick French was the first inside the home and immediately read the ransom note, then began to search the home for any sign of forced entry. This included entering Burke's room where he was sitting awake in bed and taking him to a family friend's home so he didn't have to witness the chaos. Within the next hour, multiple Boulder police officers, as well as Detective Linda Arndt, arrived at the home as well. Detective Arndt made sure to be near the home's phone between the hours of 8 and 10 a.m., awaiting the phone call from the kidnappers, but a phone call never came through. Detective Arndt noted that during this time, John and Patsy did not stay near the phone and almost seemed to forget that this call was supposed to be coming through. Detective Arndt also noted that during her time in the home, John and Patsy seemed as if they didn't want to be near one another and were mostly sticking close to friends and staying in different rooms than one another. Around this time, the FBI was contacted because this was a kidnapping and therefore was under jurisdiction of the FBI. Agent Ron Walker was assigned to the case. He remained in close contact with Detective Linda Arndt via phone throughout the day and arrived at the Ramsey home in person around 2 p.m. In addition to law enforcement, Fleet and Priscilla White, friends of the Ramseys, were also allowed into the home and aided in the search of the home. In the years since this case, this detail has been widely scrutinized. The Boulder police should have immediately determined the home a crime scene and taped it off to any outside individuals. Instead, however, they allowed John and Patsy Ramsey, as well as their friends, to walk around the house, touching and moving things and tampering with evidence, something that is unheard of when it comes to crime scene investigation. Sometime around 10:30 a.m., John Ramsey supposedly went missing for close to an hour and couldn't be found in the home. When he returned, he said that he went for a walk to clear his head and got the mail. At this time, Detective Arndt noticed that John was acting particularly antsy and anxious and asked him and his friend Fleet White to search the home again to give them something to do. She specifically told them to search the house from top to bottom, starting at the third floor and working their way down, and to look for anything that the police might have missed, but not to touch anything. Detective Arndt noted that John went straight down to the basement that doubled as Burke's train room, even though she had asked him specifically to start on the top on the third floor. Fleet White accompanied John Ramsey down to the basement where he noticed that a small window in the basement was open and that a suitcase was sitting underneath it like a stool. John told Fleet that he had recently gone through the window when he had locked himself out of the house. John then entered the wine cellar, a very dark, small room adjoined to the basement that seemed to have been overlooked by law enforcement. Fleet White reported that as soon as John opened the door, before he turned on the light, John screamed and said, "I found her." JonBenet's lifeless body was laying on the wine cellar ground. She was wearing the outfit Patsy had put her in the night before and was covered with a white blanket from her bed. She had duct tape over her mouth, a white cord tied around her wrists, and a homemade garrote made from white cord and a broken paintbrush around her neck. A garrote is a weapon that is used to strangle someone and is usually made from wire or cord with two handles on the side to pull with. John immediately removed the duct tape, wrist restraints, and garrote, picked JonBenet's body up, and carried her upstairs to the living room. He then placed JonBenet's body on the living room floor in front of the Christmas tree. John asked Detective Arndt if JonBenet was dead, to which she replied, "Yes, she's dead." Patsy became hysterical, throwing herself on JonBenet's body and crying. An autopsy would show that JonBenet died from a skull fracture from a blow to the head and was also strangled. The autopsy also revealed that there was a small amount of dried blood and abrasions in the vaginal area and that it appeared as though her entire body had been wiped down with a cloth and then redressed. After the discovery of JonBenet's body, and this now being a homicide instead of a kidnapping, the case was taken from the FBI and was back under the jurisdiction of the Boulder Police Department. FBI agent Ron Walker offered to continue to assist the Boulder Police Department with the case and suggested bringing in FBI agents to help. But Boulder Police declined his offer and were adamant that they wanted to continue the investigation alone. Soon after the discovery of JonBenet's body, Detective Arndt requested to sit down with John and Patsy Ramsey to ask them questions about the events leading up to the discovery of the body, but they refused to talk. John called his lawyer and was also overheard talking on the phone with his pilot and requesting a flight to Atlanta as soon as possible. But Detective Arndt had to tell him that he could not leave town. Patsy Ramsey then called her own lawyer as well. Detectives also asked John if they could speak to his first wife, Lucinda, who lived out of the state, and he proceeded to hire her a lawyer as well. Against officers' requests, the Ramseys then decided to leave their home and stay with friends John and Barbara Fernie. Soon after, 9-year-old Burke Ramsey was interviewed by a child psychologist, clips of which can be found online. During this interview, Burke is asked personal questions as well as questions about his sister and her murder. In the years since the murder, this video footage of Burke has been heavily analyzed, and many find that his behavior is bizarre. He speaks in a very casual, non-emotional way about his sister's murder. The psychologist asked him if he feels safe in his home due to the fact that his sister was murdered there, and he says yes, that he feels safe. She also asked him if he had any secrets, to which he replied, quote, "I probably do, but I don't really remember them. And if I did remember any, I don't think I'd tell you," end quote. When asked if things in the home had changed, he said his parents cried sometimes, but, quote, "I'm basically just going on with my life," end quote. And when asked about how he thinks JonBenet died, he said, quote, "They maybe took a knife out and went, then he did a stabbing motion with his hands." You know, something like that. Or maybe a hammer, hit her in the head, and maybe, and again proceeded to gesture as if hitting someone over the head. The consensus online is that Burke seemed to be giving rehearsed answers and appeared to be void of any real emotion. After Burke's interview, Patsy and John decided to do an interview of their own and went on CNN on January 1st, 1997. They explained that they believed someone broke into their house and killed JonBenet, and Patsy pleaded to the cameras for people to, quote, hold their babies tight, end quote, because someone was out there. However, at this time, the Ramseys still had not even sat down with the Boulder police for an interview, and law enforcement was very confused and frustrated that they went to the media before conducting an official interview with investigators. In fact, Governor Rick Owens even issued a public statement to the Ramseys telling them that they need to speak with the police. During this time, the public was becoming divided regarding what they believed really happened to JonBenet. Many thought that the Ramseys were grieving parents who needed time to cope with the loss of their daughter, and many thought that they were behaving oddly and forcing their emotions. Many also thought that it was odd that they were evading the police when they could help them find the person or people responsible for killing their daughter. Soon after the interview aired, John, Patsy, and Burke moved from Boulder back to Atlanta, Georgia. Finally, 4 whole months after JonBenet's murder, John and Patsy agreed to sit down with the Boulder police for an interview. However, they had their lawyers obtain the questions the police had for them before the interview so they could be prepared, which is unheard of. During their interview, they remained adamant that an intruder broke in and killed their daughter and pointed the finger at various people from the community, including their family friend Bill McReynolds, who had played Santa at the Christmas party just the night before the murder, as well as their housekeeper. They also both refused to take a polygraph test. This Christmas will be 23 years since the murder of JonBenet Ramsey, a murder which still remains unsolved. Over the years, different theories and people of interest have surfaced. Is her family to blame? Perhaps her mom or dad killed her in a fit of anger. Or maybe her brother killed her because he was jealous of all the attention she was receiving. Maybe it was a tragic accident that a desperate family tried to cover up. Or maybe there really is an intruder out there, someone who wished harm upon the Ramsey family, or a stranger who saw JonBenet in a beauty pageant and became obsessed with her. Join me in 2 weeks for part 2 of the JonBenet Ramsey story, where I discuss the different theories surrounding her murder and the odd details of her case that just don't add up. As always, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate every single one of you who takes the time out of your busy lives to listen to my show. Once again, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Weird on the Rocks Podcast, Twitter at Weird_Rocks, and the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com. And until next time, cheers and stay weird.
That was a Titancast episode.